Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1996 classic, The Rock, directed by Michael Bay. Brother Jay, since this is your movie, I'm going to let you start off. Tell us about The Rock.
This is a fabulous movie. Also, fuck you, Microsoft.
Skype has delayed us this fine evening.
So, Skype asked me probably 50 questions to reset my account.
You forgot your Skype sign-in?
Well, I have two accounts, one for the podcast and one that's like I've had for a billion million years. And I made one specifically for the podcast so I don't get confused, because I didn't want like anybody interrupting me when I was trying to record unless we specifically invited them to the podcast.
Sure.
So Microsoft says, you know, what can you give us three email addresses of people that you've recently emailed and what the subjects of those emails were? And when was the last time you bought a Microsoft product? And what was the credit card number you used, and when did it expire?
What?
Also, yes.
Fuck you, Russia. It's Russia.
Yeah. Yes. This sounds yet. Like fishing. Also, I have not unplugged my router yet.
It actually turns out I had to unplug my router anyway, so I think I probably did that after they said so.
The Russians own us anyway, so.
Well, you don't have to make it easy for them. Back to non-controversial topics, like our love of the movie The Rock, 1996. Did we see this all in the theater? Maybe, well, we didn't. We couldn't have. This is a little bit too late for us all to see in the theater. And then maybe in summer, 96. It could have been the summer.
It came out in summer. I'm pretty sure we all saw it in the movie theater together. It was before I moved.
This would have been a movie that we went to see together.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure we all saw it together. I was not working at the theater at that point, but...
We had to pay for the movie, which was...
Yeah...
This one was worth paying for.
Of course. So, Brother Jay, I was joking, but was this on your list? Was this a Jay movie?
Oh, no. Nope. This is a Brother Drew movie.
Could have been. I don't remember if it was me or Eric, but...
It wasn't me. I wouldn't have willingly resubmitted myself to watch this torture again.
So, Brother Jay, let's start off with a controversy. Of course, who knows? I don't actually know how Brother Drew feels either, but let's start with Brother Jay, because it sounds like you did not enjoy yourself in this movie.
No, it was cheese fest. It was caging it up all over the place. Like, couldn't wipe it off with a hot shower and some soap. The best part was Ed Harris, and he was only in it for like a minute and a half. So, sorry, spoiler.
I agree with everything you just said, and this movie was awesome.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way, too. I mean, I put in
how?
My... Well, I, okay, how? So I put
I'm
in my...
I'm so confused.
Well, first of all, it's actually a beautiful movie. It's not necessarily beautifully edited, necessarily.
It's a Michael Bay lens flare explosion extravaganza.
Well, okay, J.J. Abrams is our lens flare man. There is a lot of explosions. It is definitely over the top.
Mm-hmm. Definitely over the top? That's generous.
No, I was looking at Michael Bay, why people hate Michael Bay. And I think I'm gonna take a similar tack on the... Like, I find myself defending Michael Bay like I defend Guy Fieri. He gives the people what they want. It's not art, necessarily, but it's... well, I don't know. It's art. I mean, so he directed Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, all the Bad Boys movies, and all the Transformers movies.
Okay, not a single one of those I've liked.
You don't like Armageddon?
No.
You don't like Bad Boys 2?
No.
I have not seen the Transformers movies because the first one bored me. He makes a certain kind of movie, and people crap on it for it.
That's because they're crap.
I mean, he kind of makes the same. I think what Brett Ratner is a low rent Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm. Look, yeah. I am by no means a sophisticate. I'm not highly cultured. It doesn't take a lot to impress me in certain circumstances. And I'm not sometimes overly picky of movies, as I think Brother Drew will say. There are some movies that he just is awestruck that I would consider enjoying, that he would like to see burn in hell. But that's fine. But I think that Michael Bay makes movies I just don't like. They don't speak to me because they just seem so ridiculously over the top. I get lost in them. They take me out of the movie.
I agree with that too, but I enjoy being... I enjoy being able having the running commentary in my head saying, oh, I know what he's doing. Wait, I don't believe he's doing that, but oh well. I wonder if he just let Nicolas Cage go in this scene and this scene. Oh, and he must let Sean Connery just go in this scene. It turns out all that is true.
Yeah, I believe that. That seems reasonable, but I don't think that's how you make a good movie.
I think it's... I can't quite make the full analogy in my head, but I think it's very similar to why some people like professional wrestling. You know it's not real. You know it's kind of silly. It's definitely over the top, but it's just easy, digestible, non-offensive entertainment.
This happens to be a little bit of kismet because I've been listening to episodes of Raised by TV starring Lauren Lapkus and John Gabris, and they literally just talk about the TV they watched growing up because they watched way too much TV. And they're slightly younger than we are, or than I am, sorry. They're probably right in the Drew range, I think, or maybe a tiny bit younger. But they had two guests that were like wrestling guys, like who have a wrestling podcast. So, and Lauren Lapkus as a young child was not a wrestling fan, and John Gabris as a fat child was totally interested in it. So they were kind of talking about their love of wrestling as kids because they grew up right in the, I guess, like Triple H kind of, I mean, they were like young when, during like the first WrestleManias. Like, I think we were all fairly, like, Drew, you were how old during WrestleMania 1-ish?
Fourth grade.
Oh, well, okay. Well, maybe that was your time too. I don't know. I just remember by the time WrestleMania was a big deal, like pay-per-view sort of thing, I think it had already kind of jumped the shark at our house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we watched Southwest Championship Wrestling on like it feels like a black and white satellite image, if I remember. I could be wrong.
When you say we, what you mean is you and Brother Drew.
Yeah, me and Drew. Anyway, what they were talking about, two of them really like wrestling, but don't like sports. And people are like, you don't like sports, but you like professional wrestling? They're like, well, yeah, because you go to a basketball game to root for LeBron James, who is just slightly better than everybody else on the court. Or, you know, the one team that, you know, plays fine because they shoot a couple of baskets more accurately. He's like, when LeBron James dunks on someone and then hits them with the chair while ripping off his shirt and yelling at them that he's going to have sex with their wife, that's entertainment.
Professional wrestling is soap opera straight porn.
Oh, it totally is. It's all scripted, yeah. and it's all designed to be pleasurable. I'm not a big wrestling fan necessarily, but yeah, I think a Michael Bay movie, I think you're right, is it fits that, like, you know what you're going to get. It checks all the boxes for you.
It checks all your boxes.
Well,
okay. My boxes at the end of this experience were empty and unfulfilled.
Well, I think when they go through the plot and the cast, I think I'm just trying to convince you that maybe you should take another look at how good this movie is.
I had forgotten just how awesome even the opening of this movie was. I mean, you've got the shots of like Butch Ed Harris intercut with like the Apocalypse Now helicopters, and then just a scene of fire.
It was amazing.
Loved it.
And you got David Morse, who's great fan favorite from Contact, 12 Monkeys, and Long Kiss Goodnight. But yeah, no, okay, so can we start the movie? I want to talk about the plot because it's kind of fun.
We should.
So we start at Arlington National Cemetery, where Brigadier General Francis Hummel, Ed Harris, from Creepshow. It was amazing going through Ed Harris's IMDb credits and realizing that this is maybe only the second Ed Harris movie we've talked about in the podcast. And Ed Harris has a lot of good movies.
And neither of you are watching Westworld?
No.
No.
I hear it's good.
He is really good in it.
I like him. I think he's good in pretty much everything I've seen him in.
Have we done the History of Violence on the podcast?
We have not. Oh. We have not done Apollo 13. We have not done Pollock.
We really haven't done a History of Violence?
We've talked about it, but we haven't done it. I think in 2016, it was on the same month as Road to Perdition. And then it probably got bumped off in favor of some Star Trek thing we were doing or something.
Death Watch.
Anyway, so yeah, so he's visiting the grave of his wife, who passed away from an illness. And he tells her that he misses her. And he puts his Medal of Honor down on her gravestone and his wedding ring. And he goes out to do something. Turns out to be a bad thing.
So, oh, The Abyss.
Yeah, The Abyss. Yeah. The Truman Show. I wonder how The Truman Show actually stacks up, like how it is 20 years later.
Yeah, I don't know. But back to The Rock.
Sorry, back to The Rock. So he leads a group of rogue force recon Marines on a raid of a naval weapons depot.
Can we just talk about the music real quick, though?
Yes.
Because even as he's putting his ring on the gravestone and you don't know what's going on, you are behind him 100% because of the score and the music and the anthemic nature of the driving military beats.
Oh yeah, exactly.
I loved the music throughout this entire movie.
Who was the music supervisor or who did the score for this movie?
I don't know. It felt very Michael Bay, though. If he had, like, John Carpenter chops, I could see him, like, creating this music himself.
Ah, maybe.
But I doubt he does.
Brother Jay, I used to looking through Ed Harris. Mm-hmm. Have you weeded off into... he just...
No, I was just... I was just going through a bunch of Ed Harris movies I've seen. I was just reminiscing.
Yeah. So... They seize a stockpile of chemical weapons, which, by the way, since we just talked about chemical weapons, by the time you hear this, God knows when it's going to be, but we have been in a chemical nuclear weapon frame of mind for the last month.
You'll be happy to know I've moved on to a book about parasites. So
excellent.
By the way, music by somebody named Nick Glennie Smith and Hans Zimmer.
Excellent.
Hans Zimmer shows up a lot.
Wasn't he the bad guy in Die Hard? Sorry. So we have General Hummel, and we have his major, Tom Baxter, who's David Morse, like I said, who I like a lot. And they are taking this VX gas or whatever, the MacGuffin chemical weapon, and they come in these green glass balls.
Pearls. They actually make small medicine pearls, by the way. You can ask your lovely wife, Kelly, about Tessalon pearls. They're much smaller,
obviously. In real life, they would be like ceramic balls or something, and they wouldn't be glowing green.
Were they glass? Because they sure look like plastic.
Oh, I'm sure they were plastic, but yeah, who knows? I think they were supposed to be glass, right?
I would suspect that they would not have such a temperamental delivery system and such a thing in real life.
Because he drops a sphere and they are exposed to it. He is exposed to it. And he dies a horrible death. Very reminiscent of, I'm not going to remember what the chemical is in Return of the Living Dead. If we haven't watched that movie, we need to watch that movie again because that does hold up. So we see the deadly nature of this stuff that they stole. And then we go to an FBI lab in Washington, D.C., where we meet Dr. Stanley Goodspeed. I kid you not, his name is Dr. Stanley Goodspeed. Played by Nicolas Cage. And this, I texted you guys that I think this is in the prime Ridiculous Cage era.
Money penny.
Nicolas Cage is so over the top in this movie. And, like, he doesn't swear.
Nicolas Cage is over the top?
Yeah, he doesn't swear on purpose. That's his thing. And
the whole movie is over the top.
all of the, because, you know, Ed Harris is in a deadly serious movie.
He's the only one.
He is so awesome.
David Morris is in a deadly serious
movie. Yeah, David Morris is in it.
But Nicolas Cage is in a crazy comedy, and all of his funny lines are ad-libbed.
Face off.
Exactly. And I think the direction for him, and I don't know, maybe he's just a lunatic, maybe he was all coked up, I don't know. I think
all of the above.
I think the direction that he needed for Michael Bay, and again, I don't know nothing about directing, except I would give him one note from an amateur, and that's pretend that Dr. Stanley Goodspeed
takes a breath
was actually John Travolta and act like that. Because he did so much better in Face Off. So, anyway, he's called in to... he's a chemical weapons expert for the FBI. And he goes there to inspect a package sent to Bosnian refugees and ends up it's full of sarin gas. And there's this whole tense moment where he's trying to defuse a bomb while they're exposed to chemical weapons and... he is way too cool for school, and it's so over the top, and yet I was digging it. It became a ridiculous movie right at that point. It's like, okay, now we're getting it. This is just going to be pure fun adventure.
Yeah, because you had his little sidekick there for comic relief.
Yes.
With the needle.
Yes, the needle that you have to plunge into your heart.
Pulp Fiction style.
Yes. One, two, three. We have to do it three times? No. So, blah, blah, blah. He comes home from defusing a chemical weapon bomb, and he relaxes until his girlfriend, Carla, played by Vanessa Marcil, arrives home. And he's telling her all about this experiences, blah, 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 and that the world is a horrible place, and that having children would be foolish. And she's like, wah, wah, I'm preggers. Did I do that? Okay, I don't know. I'm not good with voices tonight, or maybe any night.
Well, you should have just pulled up a sock puppet. That would have helped.
Oh, you have not released that episode.
I have not, yeah. So he's stunned, and then he's like, oh, yeah, baby. And then she proposes, he accepts. It's all, you know, hilarity. So then we have Hummel, back to Hummel, is joined by other Marines who've served him over the course of their career. We have Captain Hendricks, played by John C. McGinley, who is most notable for Scrubs. Is this the first John C. McGinley movie we've watched? I thought we had seen another, but I couldn't find it.
He has to have been in another movie we've done.
Yeah, I thought so, but I couldn't find it. And then we have Captain Fry, played by Gregory Sporletter, and... Captain Darrow, played by Tony Todd, Candyman himself. Dracula from the Bleak December Dracula audio play. And these guys are straight. I mean, Tony Todd really is out of central casting for bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has he is the Tony Todd type. So they organize the raid on the Weapons Depot, and now they're going to Alcatraz Island, where they take 81 tourists hostage. They put them in the prison cells, and they are threatening the FBI and the Pentagon with releasing VX rockets against the population of San Francisco unless the government pays ransom and reparations of Marines that were killed during the clandestine mission, blah, blah, blah. Again, you're kind of rooting for Hummel, sort of.
His intentions are noble.
Sort of.
But he's a terrorist.
Oh, yeah, no, totally, yeah. No, he is a domestic terrorist. Faux show. So, after Goodspeed makes love to Carla, he receives a call that he has to report to San Francisco. And he tells her it's probably training, blah, blah, blah. And they'll get married when they're finished. And anyway, when he arrives, he's greeted by Senior Agent Ernest Paxton, played by William Forsythe, and Bureau Director James Womack, played by John Spencer. John Spencer. You know, from Twilight. But also from The West Wing and L.A. Law.
Leo McGarry.
Yes.
His last role.
And William Forsythe, I thought we would have seen more of his movies too, because he is a certain type. But he is, I think, best known to me as appearing in a couple of Rob Zombie movies, The Devil's Rejects, and I think Halloween. I think he has a role in Halloween, the Rob Zombie remake.
I always remember him from, there was like an Untouchables TV show where he played Capone.
Yes, yes, he did. He has a screen presence.
He does.
Also, you don't know in this movie, I know I'm going to be suggesting this is a subtlety in a Michael Bay movie, but you don't know whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. Like, I still have a question of whether he's a good guy or a bad guy.
He's just a guy.
Yeah. So, Goodspeed, his character is written, I mean, like, in a slightly different time, he'd be played by Don Knotts.
By the way, he played John Wayne Gacy.
William Forsythe?
Yes.
Huh. Then we meet also SEAL Commander Anderson, played by Michael Biehn from The Terminator and Tombstone. He is known for being killed in every movie he's ever been in. What was
is that true?
Didn't you tell me, was he in a James Bond movie? Was he, who was the guy who was Pierce Brosnan's partner that we thought was blown up, but wasn't blown up? Who was that
That's
guy?
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean. Okay, so it's Brad Dourif.
Yes.
All right.
Not even Never spelled mind. The same way.
Like Brad Dourif. And Stephen Dourif. Mm-hmm. Dourif, whatever. Well, that's embarrassing. I probably should take that out of the podcast, but of course I won't, because it's a hallmark of the show.
Sean Bean was like, what, Clear and Present Danger?
Yeah, it turns out Sean Bean's the one who gets killed in everything. Michael Biehn probably isn't. He's probably, but he's been in the movies we've seen. He was Kyle freaking Reese.
He was also in The Abyss with Ed Harris.
Yeah. A lot of these people have been in a lot of movies together.
What happened to Michael Biehn? He's been in some awesome movies, and then he just kind of disappeared.
I do not know. Turns out I don't know very much about him. Less than I thought, even 2 minutes ago. So they're going to try to plan a mission to rescue the hostages, and they need somebody who knows a lot about Alcatraz. So who do they get? Federal prisoner James Bond.
The only man to have ever successfully escaped from Alcatraz.
John Mason, played by Sean Connery. Now, there is no doubt that this was James Bond.
Agreed.
That's the whole tongue-in-cheek, maybe homage, whatever, but there is absolutely no doubt that his character is James Bond. So we have lots of tension, and, you know, of course, he's basically the sort of the Hannibal Lecter figure in the movie. Although we don't really know like how bad a guy he is.
He's an expert at everything.
Yes. He was a spy who got some sort of classified material and has been in prison for 20 something years because he has never divulged where the classified information went to.
He's a super escape artist.
Yeah. He is the best at everything. He's a philosopher. He's
He's educated. He speaks Latin.
Yep. B rattles off names in his accent that makes him sound super erudite. And we have the tension with the goofy Goodspeed and the way suave Mason. And one thing Mason wants is he wants to get a shave and a suit and a stay in a specific hotel. The Fairmont Hotel.
Yeah. And they're in San Francisco.
Yes.
A great city for car chases.
Sure. Yeah, some of the best car chases ever on film. San Francisco. And then we get to meet my favorite, Anthony Clark from Yes, Dear. Anthony Clark plays the hotel's hairstylist.
That part didn't really hold up very well.
Imagine that.
If we were making fun of Bronson Pinchot's character on Beverly Hills Cop, that had nothing on Anthony Clark's portrayal of this hairstylist. Oh boy, is my notes.
I think they're trying to suggest in a very mid-90s way that he might have been gay.
A little bit.
Perhaps.
Yes.
I think the word you're looking for is poncy.
I wasn't, but that fits.
Quibbling and talking about tone issues, it seems kind of silly in this movie, but maybe it's trying to be Beverly Hills Cop. It's trying to be super slapsticky at the same time as trying to be kind of serious and action-filled.
That was my problem with it. If it had been an action movie without the crap of trying to be funny, I would have enjoyed this. The problem was the slapstick bullshit. It just insulted my intelligence in a way that made me hate this as much as I always did.
Yeah, I mean, if you tone this down just a little bit, this is a Guy Ritchie movie.
No, this is a movie that takes itself so seriously that it needed some slapstick to break up the tension. Otherwise, it would be just insufferable.
You know, maybe, but man, they laid it on with a trowel.
No, yeah. They used a fucking dump truck.
It was crazy how slapsticky it got.
Trowel.
I mean, especially what we're going to talk about, but that, I mean, there's some serious things that happen in this movie, as it turns out. But yeah, maybe right. Maybe, do you think this was all editing? This is all after the fact? They added slapstickery?
I don't know.
No. I think it was on purpose.
Like baked in? Written?
Yeah.
You know, Quentin Tarantino and Aaron Sorkin were both uncredited screenwriters in this movie.
That was a comment I had that especially for a like silly Michael Bay movie, the story is actually really well crafted. Like just the moment in the beginning when they're stealing the gas where one breaks and you have to watch a dude die from it. That's a really quick and clever way just to show the audience like how bad this stuff is. And then they tell us many other times, but we've already seen it, so we don't care. And they establish, and it's in a ham-fisted way, but they establish motivations for every character. I mean, they establish why Goodspeed would be willing to risk his life. They establish why Mason would stick around. You know, they give them stakes in this whole thing.
But then they do some crazy-ass shit. Like, I like the idea that, because we know Mason's going to escape from FBI custody. We just know that's going to happen. So, I think the way they did it with his stealing the clothesline and ordering the food. I mean, that was all like the banana in the tailpipe. So, there's that. But I thought it was clever. I thought it was fun, you know, to watch the guy dangle over the building. Apparently that was when they were filming that, they really had a guy dangling in the building and they got lots of phone calls about it.
Of course they did.
And then we have maybe the most ridiculous car chase. Like, I don't mind car chases. I mean, I realize this is, you know, we've lived in Fast and Furious times. So this, you know, this is neither Bullet nor the French Connection. And it's also neither any of the Fast and Furious movies. But it is crazy ridiculous.
But fun.
Yeah, kind of.
You mean you had a hard time following and believing, especially like the disconnected cable car?
Well, it was funny because I was a little disconcerted by the swearing. Later, when you see a dozen hero characters get murdered, you realize, okay, well, that's fine. This is an R-rated movie. I think it was an R-rated movie. But yeah, it's like, huh, that's weird. But again, that's the cop from Die Hard, that character. So, I don't know. It's, anyway. So, it turns out Mason has a daughter that he hasn't seen in 20 years or whatever because he ran out because he was a terrorist or a spy or whatever.
Well, he was arrested.
She's played by Claire Forlani. Now, was that just supposed to be her friend or her girlfriend who she showed up with?
I think it was just her friend.
Okay. Yeah. Does it matter?
No, not really.
I think had she been gay, they would have made her like all poncy.
You're right, yeah. No, she would have actually...
This movie is not...
She would have literally arrived in a pickup.
Yeah. A U-Haul.
Yeah, with flannel on.
Big unicorn tattoo.
Yeah, but no, he conceived her during one of his escapes, right?
Oh, maybe yes, yeah.
Yes, that's the story.
Because he's been imprisoned, except for escaping a couple times for 30 plus years, and she's in her 20s, right?
She must be. Yeah, the timeline doesn't really work for me too much, but oh well. He got Sean Connery to appear in his movie. So anyway, blah, blah, blah. After this big old car chase between Cage and James Bond, basically James Bond just wanted to talk to his daughter. And they arrest him or take him back into custody, and he becomes part of their SEAL team.
Apparently also Mr. Dr. Stanley is a race car driver as well. It's one of his talents.
Turns out he is, for a fish out of water, he is surprisingly adept at certain things.
It's impressive, almost.
It's weird because he is not Don Knotts, who I respect tremendously after watching this movie. Actually, some of the movies like Mr. Limpet. Have you seen The Incredible Mr. Limpet?
Nope.
Yeah. Well, we should put that on the calendar at some point. It's a weird movie. But, you know, you play the Don Knotts character, the fish out of water, the kind of milquetoast that turns into the hero. This is not Nicolas Cage's character in this movie. He kind of wildly has tone shifts as well. He's trying to play both sides of the Jerry Lewis duality. Anyway, I don't know. So now this is like a caper where they're going to go and attack Alcatraz, and they have to go and basically they need to disable all the rockets and kill all the terrorists or take them into custody and free all the hostages. But things go awry because General Hummel isn't, his team is good at what they do.
They are extremely competent.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah, well. So the SEAL team gets pretty much taken out, like just murdered in a very kind of tense scene that seemed incongruous when he just got done with the slapstick car chase.
Yeah, and sort of the fun shenanigans of the old guy still having to remember the timing that he had memorized 30 years ago so he could roll through the ridiculous furnace.
Yes, the Indiana Jones furnace.
Yes.
Oh, yes. See, I went Princess Bride.
Yeah, also Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Or Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on down in the bowels of Alcatraz, but there's some weird stuff down there.
I was waiting to see Freddy Krueger show up there.
Like, why do they have, like, the weird mining cars?
Exactly. I didn't understand that at all either. It made no sense to me.
How is everything so well maintained and not overgrown?
Yeah, it seemed like Alcatraz was still doing a bustling business.
extracting ore.
Yeah, they at least they dusted the ruins.
It didn't make any sense. I didn't care. It was awesome.
Well, that's the thing. Then it becomes a buddy movie between Mason and Goodspeed.
Well, yeah, and in the meantime, Goodspeed's pregnant fiance has traveled to San Francisco.
Yes. So now everybody has someone in the danger zone.
That's right.
So anyway, so then we get at the very end kind of a crisis of conscience with the general, because the deadline they gave for shooting the rockets over the city and killing tens of thousands of people is quickly coming to an end, and they're stalling, the government is stalling, and finally he's like, nope, shoot off the bomb, or the rocket. And they sent a rocket out. And at the very last minute, he can't go through with it because it turns out he's not a mass murderer. He just wants to get that compensation for the families of the soldiers that died, blah, 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 through incompetence. And then the rest of his team turned on him.
I agree with what Jason said in the very beginning. Ed Harris is awesome in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He is the best.
Yeah, he's the only reason I didn't kill myself before the end of this movie.
He's in a totally different movie, but
he totally is.
It's great.
And it's a good movie that he's in.
Yeah. Stand down, Major.
it's great. Again, I think David Morse is in that same movie.
I think so, too.
Yeah. But you know who's in this movie? I didn't recognize it because I think it was mostly just voice. But do you know who one of the F-18 pilots were?
Jesus.
Yes, Jesus took the wheel. Mm-hmm. Stick or yoke or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. James Caviezel, credited as Jim Caviezel, was one of the pilots, which is pretty great. Yada, yada, yada. The world doesn't end.
There's a mutiny by Candyman.
Yes. Candyman and not Sean Bean. No, that Sean Bean's the guy, the SEAL commander that got killed.
Yeah. The dude with the trapezoid face.
Yes. Yes.
They were ridiculous.
Yeah. They were part of the slapstick movie.
But they were so ridiculous that you were very happy when they died gruesomely.
Okay, and at the very end of the movie,
impaled on the fence pole was my favorite part.
Yeah, that, again, that's a different movie. That's a third kind of movie. Although, that's more of a Tony Todd movie.
Do you think Sorkin wrote the Rocketman line?
Probably. Well, you know what? Yeah, maybe he did, because it was
really... No, it's not Sorkin's style.
No, that was a bad bit of dialogue.
Well, it's supposed to harken back to the Rocketman was playing when he was making sweet, sweet love to his wife.
Well, it also harkens back to the suggestion at the beginning of the movie that Nicolas Cage's character is a super music buff because he gets the Beatles album.
Yeah, yeah, on vinyl. Yeah,
that little thing that they bring up at great expense in the beginning of the movie, and then this is the payoff. It's like, what? Why? None of it was necessary.
This is a Nicolas Cage character choice. Oh, no, you're right. It had to have been written. It had to have been written. Because it was a setup way earlier and a button at the end. So.
Yeah, it went on too long. Plus, they wouldn't have gotten rights.
Well, and then, of course, this movie ends in a caper moment where he lets Sean Connery, James Mason, John Mason, whatever.
Totally expected a sequel.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is this just a total setup for a sequel? Could this have been the prequel to National Treasure?
Could have been.
I never expected a sequel to this movie.
Well, I didn't expect one, but it seemed like a total setup for a sequel. Because you know Goodspeed has a bunch of more movies in him. Although, why? It's a stupid name. And the whole, do you know the origin of your name? That did not have to be there. That's just ridiculous.
I think Michael Bay just wanted it to sound cool when Connery said it.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it. And I'm sure that when Connery says it in a room, it sounds great. Mm-hmm. And maybe it sounded great in the theater. But reflecting on it, not even Sean Connery can make lines like that work. Not even Nicolas Cage can make... And the whole thing about where he talks about how he gets to fuck the head cheerleader.
The prom queen.
Prom queen, sorry. It's like...
There were lots of problems in this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yet, enjoyable from beginning to end.
Nah, I am 180 degrees from there. The suggestion that he and his fiance go to a hotel and order champagne... For her pregnancy?
Well, there's that.
Let me just throw this out there. Eric, also, I don't know what version of The Rock you watched, but I will say this. The version that Jason and I watched was the Criterion Collection version of The Rock.
Okay, well, maybe you guys saw a different movie than I did.
It's in the Criterion Collection.
True story.
Yeah,
that's how awesome this movie is.
The movie is a thing. It is like mid-90s blockbuster movie.
Yeah. No, it's one of the last like Bruckheimer Simpson movies, right?
Probably. Because didn't Bruckheimer go on to do what, all the CSIs or whatever?
Was it Simpson that died?
Oh.
Ashford and Simpson? No.
Solid as a rock?
Yeah, something like that.
That's come on, solid as a rock.
No, you pulled it. I didn't. Yeah.
I wrote down that Sean Connery coming out of his cell is G. Gordon Liddy.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But so is William Forsythe. Everybody gets a little Liddy in them.
And that they can't see the choppers on radar, but don't you think they'd be able to hear them?
Oh, super quiet.
As they're
choppers.
Surrounding the island.
If John Eric Hexum didn't teach us anything, it's super quiet choppers.
Also, one of the dudes had a man bun back in 1996.
It wasn't John Hexum, it was Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah, John Eric Hexum was killed from Voyagers with
Voyager.
The blank.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this was Don Simpson's last movie, by the way.
And you know, the kid in Voyager is Punky Brewster's brother.
Oh, I was going to say Marilyn Manson.
No, nope.
That's the friend from Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Oh, also the friend from The Simpsons.
Once he had the guidance chips out of the missiles, why would he have to go to the process of having to do anything else with them? If there's no guidance chip in them, it pretty much renders them inoperable. But yeah. He goes to this huge... After he gets the chip out, he has to do this huge, elaborate thing afterwards. Why?
I didn't remember the huge, elaborate thing afterwards.
I just thought he put it back in the cylinders.
Why?
Well, because you don't want to leave it laying around. You know what happens when you break it? Put it back in the can, man. In the can, man.
But he takes such... He's so deliberate in everything he's doing. He spends time afterwards. Like, just take the chip and go.
Yes.
I think that's what he did.
No. Go back and watch.
Yeah, and the rail car thing really was, that was Indiana Jones. There was no reason to have that in there. Like, there must actually be rail cars in Alcatraz because they filmed on Alcatraz for part of it. So somebody must have found that and said, oh, this will be cool.
No, I choose to believe that is strictly a fabrication for the movie.
Also, pan flute music towards the end. That was a little over the top.
I wanted Sean Connery to say, no time for love, Dr. Goodspeed.
But then why the cheesy microfilm ending as the MacGuffin? Why? Why was that? What? What? Why?
Look, if it was an 80s movie, it would have ended on like a fist pump freeze frame.
Exactly.
But it was the 90s. It was the mid-90s. So they ended on a goofy little epilogue. They were in the beige Volvo.
Uh-huh. Nicolas Cage's career is a beige Volvo.
No, I think his career is magnificent.
He was on a run.
He bought dinosaur bones and built a pyramid. And he bought Action Comics number one. I'm just saying.
So he's going to play Guy Fieri in the movie?
Oh, I don't. I think the Guy Fieri. I think Guy Fieri should play himself in the buddy cop movie.
He went Leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off in 3 years.
Yeah, so he got an Academy Award nomination and a shit ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
He could have just dropped his mic and gone.
He went from Stanley Goodspeed to Cameron Poe.
We will be watching that movie at some point. It is even more ridiculous. It makes this movie look like just a straight procedural.
Yeah. And after Cameron Poe was Caster Troy.
And then he had like, what, City of Angels? And I mean, he was doing Captain Corelli's Mandolin and he was working a lot.
City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm.
Snake
were
Eyes.
His
oh my God.
Movies.
Where was Eric? What Con Air was in there somewhere.
Yeah, no, Connor.
Yeah, Connor was right after The Rock.
Wild at Heart.
Yeah? When was Wild at Heart earlier, or was that all in that period?
Oh, much, much earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, Wild at Heart was super early. He was super young still.
He started out in, well, not started out, but he was, like, he sprung on the scene in Moonstruck, one of our grandmother's favorite movies.
Wild at Heart was 1990.
He was in Peggy Sue Got Married and Raising Arizona before Moonstruck.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
See, I have a fondness for Peggy Sue Got Married.
Was he in what, Valley Girls?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Oh, he was in Valley Girl,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think he was in Valley Girl, too. Oh, no, he's great. And he's a Coppola.
Yeah.
Talia Shire is his aunt. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying. We love Nicolas Cage. I mean, he's a crazy.
We do.
Have you seen him? I think there was a clip. Maybe I'll find it and try to put it on here, where he appears maybe on a French show or an English, some sort of not America, not variety show, like a talk show at night, like a nighttime talk show. And he shows up and like does a somersault wearing a leather jacket, probably high to the gills, but he is having a good time being Nicolas Cage. Anyway, so thoughts, Brother Jay? What's your verdict on this movie?
I would give it a C at best, and that's being generous.
I think it's being way too judgmental.
That's what I do. That's my shtick. What are you talking about?
Fair enough. Okay, that's true.
Sorry for having an opinion.
No, not at all.
I didn't realize this was a dictatorship. I apologize.
Well, yeah, it's not a democracy. I don't know what this is. It's not a democracy, but... So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
This movie is totally worth your time. How long was it? It was about 88
two
minutes,
hours,
right?
2 hours and 16 minutes.
It's true. It was kind of long. But it was
kind of long. It goes by in a flash.
Yeah, it was well-paced.
I had to, immediately after this movie, we watched Jodorowsky's Dune just so I could have a palate cleanser. Because I needed to get the taste of this out of my brain.
No, this movie
Jodorowsky is a strange taste to replace this movie.
Yeah.
Worked for me.
The Rock is a fun movie with fun performances all the way through. It's a feel-good mid-90s action movie. It's great.
You know, I would say that this is a movie that knows what it is and doesn't apologize for it, but I don't think it actually knows what it is. I think it knows what it wants to be and put in all sorts of extra stuff, but still is fine and shouldn't have to apologize. I mean, this is what, and again, we're confusing these because I don't know how far apart this episode and Jodorowsky's episode is going to be, but Jodorowsky and all the commentators in that documentary are talking about how movies have become crap because of this kind of movie. And I think they're a little holier than thou, but we're going to get there at some other point, at some other episode. Maybe you've already heard it. Probably you've already heard it, actually. It turns out we'll probably release this later. So, I don't know. I think this movie is... there's no excuse for it. But I also think that it doesn't have to be. I think it's just fine.
No. Everything Jason says is completely valid. But it's also why this movie's awesome.
And it's got a cast of an amazing cast. They're all giving it their all. They may not be all going in the right direction, but they're all committed to whatever it is they're doing. Even Anthony Clarke was giving it all, even his all.
Even the Harris brother.
The Harris brother?
Is it Steve Harris or what? It was Steve Harris in this movie.
Don't know. Don't know who the Harris brothers are.
He was the last sniper dude who... Mason Interrupter. His brother is Wood Harris, who played Avon Barksdale.
Oh, on The Wire. Excellent. I did not know that. I did not know that. Weird, wild stuff. I don't know. Voices. I can't do them.
They're real brothers, not like the dwarfs.
Or the beans.
Right.
So, The Rock.
Wait, just one last thing. The Rock might be the last great Connery movie, right?
When was Entrapment?
That was a couple years later. Did you think Entrapment was a great Connery movie?
It was better than this movie.
I have not seen it all the way through. When I realized it was not going to be, it was not going to be 100% Catherine Zeta-Jones on the cover, I felt baited and switched. Actually, there's probably a different construction of that phrase.
Let's see. 2003, A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That yeah, movie is garbage.
That was a stinker.
Entrapment was 99, and then The Avengers was 98.
Ah, The Avengers. That I wonder what that would be like to watch again.
Dragonheart in 96. Dragonheart. Him and Wesley Snipes, Rising Sun, 1993.
Is that a Michael Crichton movie?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Rising Sun and Disclosure.
Yep, Michael Crichton. Yeah. You're right. Harvey Keitel.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I've even seen that movie.
I've seen it.
I totally recommend this movie. Go see The Rock.
Ray Wise. Oh, I forgot he was in it. So. Sorry. Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Gross.
What's wrong with Steve Buscemi?
I don't like him.
9/11. Never forget.
I can't wait to do Con Air.
Oh, man. Yeah. Absolutely. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.